This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Tween Tokozo next, because Tsepiso Mazibuko is a photographer based in Tokozo, has been nominated for, yeah, over a period of time, various awards, traveled the world as well, and nominated for the Discovery Award for the prestigious photography festival, a powerful series. Well, let's not even engage. I've got someone who I was looking at their talent, looking at the photographs produced, and a person who engages real-life images of the community, people, and life in Tokozo in the main. Let's bring in Tsepiso Mazibuko into the conversation. Tsepiso, welcome to Power 98.7. Welcome to Power Perspective. How are you?
Hi, Denzel. I'm all right. Thank you for having me. And hello to the listeners as well.
Absolutely. So photography is what you do.
Yes. So I practice photography.
Yeah. And how long have you been doing it?
If I'm not mistaken, it's about 11 years now.
11 years now.
Yes.
And when I was reading up on this and just looking at the interview, as I was Googling you, you wanted to be a journalist.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So yes. you would have been here at Power 98.7 doing the journalism thing, engaging in that particular space. Let me ask you this, and I'll get to the photography part. Yes. Is it something that you still think you would want to do, or would have wanted to do, or are you beyond that point? You have found your passion, you have found what you want to do. And, you know, there's not this lingering thing about journalism in the back of your head.
Well, I mean, definitely I do have moments where I contemplate if I had pursued that direction, would things have turned out differently.
Yeah.
But in some way, I do see photography as journalism. But,
yeah, it is. It is, in essence. It is.
But the only thing about journalism is that it's founded in subjectiveness. So
yeah.
That's the only thing. But I think I'm quite content, really, because I wouldn't have, I would be quite frustrated, especially with the current state of our nation. So,
and this current state of our journalism as well. Let's just say it.
Exactly.
Let's say it, Tsepiso.
Yes. So yeah. I think I grew up at a time where newspapers was a thing, and I aspired to kind of have a piece there, and, you know,
with your name.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so that was kind of a childhood inspiration. But then as time went on, I guess I was more self-aware and realizing that times are changing as well. But I do have appreciation for photojournalists, and I do have some friends who practice that, and we always argue, of course, which is the better medium. But yeah.
So just within those two mediums and the arguing of which is the better medium, from your perspective, just talk to me about the relationship that you actually see within a journalistic space and the creativity of that particular nature. Because when one looks at journalism, right, it's what I'm doing here now.
Yeah.
It's me in the newsroom. It's me in an editorial capacity. And I'm just talking radio. And then there's the newspaper aspect you're talking about. There's the editorial component to it. There's the TV component to it. And these particular days, there's podcasts and the likes of all of that. And then you get photojournalism, photography as well now. And that's also an expressive, you know, medium in itself. So journalism, expressive, and various phases of journalism, depending on what you want to do. You could do heavy political, or you could do tourism on the one hand. And I suppose also in photojournalism, in the journalistic space, you could decide what you're going to, you know, and mm-hmm. what your niche is going to be. If I put journalism and I put photography in front of you and I said, speak to the similarities, what do you think they would be, the creative similarities?
Well, I think definitely the similarities would be within the creative process, the process itself, you know. The getting to know the people that you'll be engaging with, and obviously forming a collaboration is one of the similarities within the field. And of course, research. And before you have an opinion, of course, you have to research. So yeah. I think that's one of the similarities.
Let me tell you a secret. There's a lot of journalists who haven't done the research but have opinions. So
I'm not surprised. Probably.
I should have been someone in photography and not journalism. the way we hammering journalism at the moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but carry on. Yeah. I love the creative process, collaboration, research you're talking about.
Yes. I think with photography, and then where it starts to differ, it's that with photography, it leans majorly on the art part, because it's about expression. Whereas I mentioned with photojournalists, it's grounded with the intent to create factual conversations or stuff like that.
Yeah.
But with photography, there's more room to either be expressive by addressing political issues or issues of identity or whatever that you feel is close to your heart, really. So that's where the creative process differs, because you get a lot of photographers that identify as artists. I myself identify as a storyteller, because, and at the same time, another point where there is also a difference is that, this is a personal opinion, with photojournalism, it's almost that you're waiting for news to happen so that you can go and report it or maybe investigate it. But with photographers or artists in general, you pick out a part of the world that you want to focus in. Like, it's almost you have the square full of so much, but you just are specific in focusing in this one part of the frame. So that's what makes it different in a way. Wow. As well.
Okay, so you know, let me just engage the photography part a little bit, right?
Yes.
I have a good understanding of what happens in the journalistic space, and why I'm engaging this a little bit as I am is I want to just understand the photography part a little bit before we get into the picture, you know, the kind of things that you do and that, you know, that homing in of like a small part of the world and then making that the focus. In the journalistic part, there's a lot of technical aspects to it. In the one aspect, you know, I could look at a conversation that's over an hour, but I need to reduce the content to a 10-minute piece or maybe even 5 minutes. And so there's a lot of technical aspects to that. There's a lot of editorial in that, in having to choose, you know, what moment I'm going to actually choose. As you choose a moment in the photography space, I'm choosing a moment in the speech or whatever, you know, somebody would have been saying. And particularly in documentaries and all of that, you then lead even more into a particular focus then. In the photography part of things, how much of the technical aspects have become more important? You know, I would assume that in the beginning, in the old days, you would take a picture, you would take it to a dark room and you would process it and it would be the picture, right?
Yes.
With modern day elements, you have the ability to do all sorts of things to a picture. You know, in fact, coloring and engaging and shading and focusing and all sorts of things, even after you've taken the photo.
Yes.
How much of that is an important part of the industry itself, of the skill itself? that you have to have as a component?
Well, I think from what I've observed being around a lot of photographers was that firstly, equipment is what most photographers strive to invest in. But at the same time, creative processes are different from photographers' view and also the type of body of work or subject matter they're dealing with. So it all depends on aesthetic, really. Like for myself, funny you should talk about analog photography, like the film era. I shoot specifically film now because I enjoy the aesthetic and also the grounding it gives, and also challenging the materiality of something so rigid that I can't see, you know? It's different, really. Another photographer can be really invested in equipment, and then you have another photographer that's like me, that's more of a philosophical approach in a way. And then you've got others that are studio-based that are invested in all sorts of lighting or Photoshop. Or integrating AI tools, those kind of things. So others are like multimedia-based where they merge paintings with photography. So, it's limitless what you can really do.
So then I have a question for you then. How much then is left to the skill component, the skill element? Because in essence, what I think I'm asking here, and you can help me, Tsepiso, is I could be an ordinary photographer, and I could take a bad shot. Yeah. And I could take it to a laboratory. Let me just call it a laboratory, and some person who knows the skill of color and or engagement or, you know, background and or other begins to make it a world famous picture. How much of the skills level is needed to have taken the original picture of a particular skill, so that that is not lost, and the component that's important is not only the component now that's left in the studio, you know, that what you do with it after.
Well, there's a lot of variables to it, really. Like first, it's the idea and the execution of it. There needs to be a concept, and then obviously in the execution you're considering what you're going for, the final output. But then that's where the retoucher comes in, the photo editor. You can either go for someone that deals with that stuff, and most photographers don't like dealing with the layout and the output because they're really just good with the actual creation of their works. So then the editor can obviously bring their set of skills in maneuvering how to balance color, or maybe to let you know that no, maybe we shouldn't use this type of paper, this one is more suited for this narrative. So a lot of things come into play before the actual if you're a photographer who's doing exhibitions. So it's the layout that needs to be considered, and of course how the plan of the exhibition is at. You're thinking about which image is going to be first and last, and how it's going to be printed, and a lot of I think logistics really come into that. But definitely it takes skill. But maybe to wrap this up, I also have a belief that it's also a feeling thing. There's a photographer, a veteran photographer called Henri Cartier-Bresson. So he emphasized a lot on the decisive moment. So sometimes as a photographer, when you've really like perhaps have done this for some time, sometimes you kind of feed off the environment you find yourself in, and you completely are out of the thinking of this is a good frame or this, and you're just kind of going with the flow of clicking and not clicking and experiencing the whole moment, I guess. Yeah.
I suppose that that decisive moment is something that's ultimately crucial, because it's based on time.
Yeah.
Because
yes.
Yeah, if you don't get it now, you're not going to get it. And it was that particular moment that you needed to have been ready and to have got the picture. And if you didn't get it, it's gone. It's something of the past. Let's talk about you, Tsepiso, a little bit. And you know, your journey then in photography, then introduced at school, I would suppose.
Yes.
Yeah. And let me see. Buthle Busile School, secondary school.
Yes. It's Buthle Busile, yes.
That's where you got to understand photography and this particular medium.
Yes. Specifically at grade 11.
Yeah. And how did that happen?
Definitely I was in my teens and I was a bit rebellious to joining, but I was studying visual arts as part of my subject. And then we were told if we wanted to kind of join after school program, which was the Of Soul and Joy. And then I was one of the first students really to participate in that.
Yeah.
And then, I actually went, but to be quite honest, it was the after the buffet eating afterwards. It really got me.
You know what, Tsepiso? I love the honesty on Power Perspective. You know what? Okay, so there was a buffet.
Yeah, and it was Nando's. It was like, you know, I'm just a girl, and you know, I'm fighting my mom about how much she should give me to go to school. So, I'm seeing all these platters, and I'm thinking, I'm definitely going
like,
to
hello,
start
mom.
Photography. Yeah. So yeah, and that's how I really joined, which is quite funny, really. You know. So and then eventually, I started really developing. A love for it beyond, of course, the good food.
let me have an understanding though, because in a lot of these particular instances, even when you're at school and there are programs and somebody and people are introduced to things, photography is an expensive hobby to have.
Yeah.
As you would have pointed out, there's you know, a lot of people invest in equipment. And this particular equipment can cost hundreds of thousands of rands at times. So how does somebody who is in grade 11, who is interested in the bouquet, you know, buffet, and engaging the elements of photography, begin to then navigate to where you get your first camera? How do you navigate that part? Because I'm not assuming that you immediately and you had a camera.
So here's the funny part.
The buffet. This is also the funny part.
So what happened was at the first inception of the whole project, they kind of motivate us, they had told us in the Of Soul and Joy project, because at the time we were loaning the cameras out you know, for a certain duration.
Yeah.
And they had told us that the six top students would get rewarded cameras, right, at the end of the year.
Yeah.
So I think all of us were kind of like in a healthy competition, of course, of trying to make it to the top six.
Yeah.
And then... So at the time I was doing a body of work on a guy named Bakiso, who lived in my street for a long time. But his story is something that's also quite something. It influenced the type of stuff that I photograph in a way. So, but yeah, not to derive from the story. And then at the end of the year, they announced who were the top students. So I was quite surprised, honestly, because I was quite frustrated, because it initially when we started, there was a lot of us, there were 60 students.
Right.
So at the end of the program, it was only six, and I was the only female. So I was also quite on the fence because I have to go back and tell my mother that I'm not going to go to varsity to be
Yeah.
studying law or journalism or anything that would be regarded as perhaps a
Having a
better
proper
way.
degree, yeah, like find a job.
Exactly. So now I had to decide that, okay, I'm going to do this photography thing and see how it goes. But I had already heard, talks of how it's hard in the industry, So I was just already quite skeptical and wondering if I should go for the safe spot because academically I could hold my own fort, I wasn't super smart, but I was there. So yeah, it is quite expensive. I don't want to lie. Even coming back to the present, as I shoot analog, it's quite expensive to get film because it's something that's also dying. It's a dying medium as well. So yeah, there's a lot of expenses really.
Then let me have an understanding. So you start at 60. The number was more or less 60. And
Yes.
at the end of the program, there's six.
Yes.
And the top six would have got cameras. So
Yes.
was it an automatic that you got a camera because there were only six left, or
No. So
okay.
basically, of course, we were still young at the time. So during the graduation ceremony, there was still quite a handful of us, maybe about
Okay.
40,
Oh, right. Got you.
perhaps.
Okay.
And then,
I
yeah,
was like,
but
at the end, there was
it
six only, and I mean, then
No,
it's like, oh,
no.
okay, there's only six left. Camera for you. Camera for you.
No, it happened during the course of time. I think others just lost interest, or it was just, one of those things. And then the first group just ended up becoming six of us.
You talk about you talk about shooting on film, right? And film is that, let me have a understanding of what you're talking about. It's that thing that traditionally your mom and your dad used to shoot film on. It's that little roll, right? And you put it in and you stretch it and then you begin to take pics, right? My understanding of that particular thing was that it had died out and gone, and we were all in the electronic space. And then suddenly, I think about a year ago, I'm looking at pictures or people, with these old-fashioned cameras, and I'm looking at them, and they're very proud about these things that they've got, and it's people have moved back, just like people have moved back to LPs and records. People have moved back to that old particular film. Is there, let me ask you, is there the capacity for people to take up people who still shoot on film? Because if I'm shooting on film but nobody can present or develop my photos, then it's pointless, then it's a dying, it's a dying skill. Are you telling me that the camera is back, the film is back, and people who can develop the dark rooms and all of this, that's all back as well?
So acquiring the film is the easiest part
Okay.
because there is still some camera shops that sell film.
Right.
But what was the need in the community was spaces that could allow you to actually develop your film
Yeah.
because there are only like two places, and what they do a lot of commercial and stack processing. So it's there's not a lot of detail that's being used for printing your prints of film. So there's that. But during the course of time, a lot of Johannesburg-based film photographers that I
Yeah.
know, we've kind of relied on institutions such as the Market Photo Workshop,
Right.
and a group of friends. We actually started a collective called Umhlabathi. So we are occupying the old building that was the Market Photo Workshop, and we've turned it into a photography hub, and we actually have a dark room there, so which is also quite a nice thing that we set up. So
Where's
now,
this in Tokozo?
no, it's in Newtown
Okay,
in Joburg.
right.
Yes. So the only process that gets hard is that everything is back. The only process is getting to find the difficulty is finding a dark room
Yeah,
that's
the
gonna
dark room.
actually explore what you're
Yeah.
trying to go for fully, really.
Why have you decided to go back to the old school system? Is it just because that it gives you more control and over the product that over the content that you're shooting? In essence, you've got to make it work with the old equipment, whereas if you click 100 times on the new digital system, it's you can ignore 99% of them and find the one that you have. With the roll, you can't do that. Every click is a photo.
I think for me, one of the reasons would be the type of photography I was introduced to. So I was introduced to the OGs of photography back when there was a lot of black and white. So a lot of people that I looked up to were a lot of veteran photographers, like your likes of Sam Tshumufu King, the late, and of course Andrew Shabangu. There's quite a lot, you know. So for me, I've always known that they use analog, but of course, as I grew up, I began to understand and have my own reasons. The reasons, of course, were personal in a sense that I did not want to feel like the machine is working for me, you know.
True.
I'm not hating on digital photographers, but sometimes digital photography is very efficient if you're covering a gig and you need to just, you know, deliver photographs to a client and that's it. But if you're doing personal work, analog can play a huge role, because that way you kind of have to you're creating a formula in terms of what specifically you're looking for, and are more and quite intentional. While with digital you can edit on the spot, but with analog you kind of have to be intentional and know what you're going for.
You can't add to it later on. The
You
sort of
can, though.
there you go.
You can.
Back in the dark room, you can. Let's
No,
let's.
you can actually scan them and make them digital files, just as in an SD card. So
Brilliant.
you scan the film strip.
Let's talk about what you shoot. If we were talking music now, I'd ask you what genre, you're engaging in. What is it that you're specializing in the photography space?
To be quite honest, it's something that is ever changing, because a lot of my photography is influenced by my life and my life experience and my community, you'd say. If we're talking in terms of subject matter, I'm more drawn to the political, you know, like history. And of course, landscape, you know. But of recent, I've been quite interested in the actual act of looking and using the camera and reproducing moments, you know. And memory itself, just all those concepts of understanding an image, but also understanding life and understanding why I see some things, because I think photographers, we feel deeply. So for me, most of my things are always a reflection of things that I experience. So some people I use as a vessel, and some it's almost like a collaborative effort to talk about whatever theme I might be exploring at the time in the body of work.
Sure. And is it the fact that you're exploring your surroundings, the people and the community in essence? Is it something that in essence is something that is almost a given? I'm here. I'm part of this community, and this is my subject matter. Is that in the main what drives it? And within that particular space, I can have an understanding of how you would divide it within the landscape, how you would divide it within a political space, how you could divide it within a historical context. But all of that would remain within the individuals and within the community of a particular space. How you engage it, whether it be landscape, historical, political, or other, would be a different matter. Is that how it's just worked?
In some instances, it has been because, of course, it's something that I know and it's accessible to me. But it wasn't always like that, because when I had finished high school and pursuing photography as a career now and studying it, I was actually quite ashamed in photographing where I come from, because you meet all these people from all walks of life, and it's kind of that. So I wasn't photographing my neighborhood for a certain time, but I was photographing it, but from a surface level. But then what became a hard thing was that I had to photograph one place for a period of 11 years. So it's kind of like a yin yang. It's good, and it's also got its own cons, you know. So yeah, it's different, I guess, because one thing is I can be an insider and still not represent people in an accurate way, and then I can still be an outsider and still, you know, represent people in a respectable way that doesn't, you know, diminish their stature or their aura as human beings, you know. So for me, representation is very important. Hence, I think most of my work is about internalized views, because I'm not just going out and finding a location. The people that I photograph are people that I'm going to meet when I'm going to the shops to buy bread. So it's also like a conscious thing that if I misrepresent the mother of my neighbor or so-and-so, it also is, can you sleep with knowing that you're misrepresenting a certain person? So it's also dealing with those dynamics, really.
How important is it that one needs to have some form of academic study background into into photography? Have you found that you know, it's something that you needed? If you hadn't had that particular element, you know, your work would be very different versus, you know, some people who say, I picked up a camera and I went and I took pictures and I found out I'm good at it. You know, has the studying element benefited your journey in it?
I would say this one is a yes and a no thing. A yes would be I got exposed to other photographers, what they do, and other ways of expressing myself. The no would be I often miss the time when I was just photographing from not knowing, because there's this point where you find yourself where you're having exhibitions and you kind of have to explain your art, and which can be quite a difficult thing to explain emotion or to explain, let's just say, feelings. So sometimes it doesn't work out, because it limits you when you have knowledge of what to do and all of that. So you kind of can't be free when creating in a sense. So knowledge is good, but at the same time, it has a certain constraint in how you can really just be free with creating without thinking of, oh no, if I photograph this person like this, it might represent this or that. So by the simple act of thinking of the rules of photography or what it might mean ethically or not, then it also puts you at a point where you're already ruining the moment, and the moment is no longer captured for its, you know, its pure present vibe, but you're imposing your own ideas into people, which I find quite unfair. Because Denzel, if I photograph you crying right now and then after 30 minutes you're laughing, that doesn't mean the picture I have of you crying is a representation of you as a person. It's just the moment in your life that was taking place, and I happened to be there with my camera, you know? So yeah.
So let me ask you of when you speak of having exhibitions, right?
Yes.
Does one when you are now professionally involved and you and people understand your work and you're looking and you're not just clicking anymore. You know, there's the point where you're just clicking, but at some point you're a photographer and there are exhibitions and people know of your work and you're selling your work and you're invited abroad and all of those things. So now you know there's a bit of a name, there's a bit of a brand. When that begins to happen, apart from in the beginning I'm clicking for fun and I'm taking great photos, is there then a deliberate effort then to begin to click for exhibitions and click for themes and click for particular storylines that you then have in mind about a particular exhibition that you might want to, you know, showcase? Or do you just click a million things and then begin to sort out those things later on and say, ah, you know, this is great and this fits, you know, together, and or is there that particular deliberate attempt to say, hey, listen, let me theme something, and then you go out and you shoot particularly to a theme, as now as you've grown in the space, as you know, you are now a professional photographer. How do you engage later on? How does the work division happen?
So sometimes you can, I'll speak for myself. With other projects, it was a given thing that there's going to be an exhibition. And of course, when you're an emerging photographer, you want to have people come see your work, engage, just create dialogue, because that's why we create work, to create dialogue, right? And then in the gallery space, it's where things kind of start to become a bit different, where there's a certain different type of language that's being used. That's different from where you're covering commissions or commercial work. But in a gallery space, you're representing, with lack of better words, maybe your ideologies. So that's how it works. So for me, I've been frustrated with the gallery space, because it's the perfect setting for selling your work, of course. But what it does is the initial work is created for other people to consume work, but with galleries, it lets people from the outskirts are not able really to have access to it. So it has created kind of like a system where you create work solely for the purpose of having an exhibition, and then after the exhibition, the work is really kind of now looking for another place, or if there's new work, then you're exhibiting, but then the actual art of the work never really exists to the people that it's created for. So those are the things that maybe other photographers are battling with, understanding the gray area of the business side, where you of course you have to survive and make a living, but at the same time there's the sensitivity that comes with creating and putting out there and wanting recognition, of course, from your peers and so on.
Do you know, I mean, I've been in a few galleries myself and you know, stood in front of a few paintings and artwork, photography as well, and looked at it and had my own impression and an idea of what it was talking to me about. And you know, the artist, and you can see it in movies and documentaries and whatever, sometimes that whole particular play on what do you see it in it? and somebody would see something and the artist would come and particularly then speak to what the artist really engaged. Do you have a frustration sometimes with the aspects of gallery and the business side of things where your depiction of something, the emotion and timing of something, like you said, you could take a picture of me crying and 10 minutes later I'd be laughing with you and I'd be both of those characters in your space. But you would have been there to see my moment of crying. Does it sometimes, or, you know, is it too much of a creative whereby you get so attached to what you are trying to showcase rather than what the individual is buying and purchasing within the gallery? And sometimes those two things are different.
Yes, definitely. I think to first answer from the gallery, right? A lot of photographers or artists in general, they find themselves being kind of being labeled as a certain, let's say if I paint trees,
yeah,
I get signed under a gallery and they're signing me for painting trees. So that means that I have to paint trees and meet what they want. But if next year I decide, no, actually I want to paint apples, it creates kind of like a rift between gallery and artist, but sometimes it's not always the case. They're galleries
because they're selling you as a three person, and they don't want you to mix and become a lucky packet, because I suppose the essence and the value in them having you as a three person speaks to the concept of them being able to monetize that. Whereas if you were just all over the place, they're selling you differently all the time. I understand the concept that you've just painted to me. They want you to paint trees.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then the second one would be then in how people understand work, like in terms of the next person can say they see blue, the other one could say they see green, right? Mm. But with time, you learn to understand that as people, we have different interpretations because of our own personal history or traumas or memories. The color red might symbolize love to other people, but to me, maybe it might symbolize danger or those kind of things. So I don't think that we are too concerned with what the majority of people really see in the work, but rather we strive to kind of create a message that when you look at the image, you can see the intention of the photographer without me kind of explaining it. And then afterwards, you can start building your own connections and kind of imagining the scene and letting the image breathe without me imposing my own things, you know. So for me, that's how I see it, really. I'm not really bothered if somebody sees something different, because I also see the world in a very shifted way because of the person that I am and because of how I was raised and you know. So it's different from person to person, really.
Sure. Just as a, we're talking gallery and person to person and the purchasing, I was looking at some of the you know, pictures you've taken, the art that's out there, and the nice price tags on them as well. Does it pay? You know, have you been able to go back to the mom and say, look at me now, you know? My stuff is in Brussels and Paris and France and on the walls of various people. Does it pay at the end of the day? You know, I mean, there's always the skill, the art, the passion, you know, all of those things. And people say, I do it for those reasons. But at the end of the day, you got to pay rent.
Yeah, for sure. You know what? To be quite honest, it's not for the weak, you know. And I don't mean in a physical sense.
Yeah.
You have to constantly motivate yourself because it's like freelancing. People have stable jobs and they know for a fact at the end of the month they're going to get a salary, but when you're freelancing, Some months it's dry, there's zero income, and then some months there's an influx of money, so you kind of have to learn how to also budget, you know. But I think a lot of which is a big problem in our industry, is the struggle that comes to actually be your own everything, you know. If you are not signed under a gallery and you're independent artist like myself, you kind of have to push yourself with spaces like in galleries, or applying for festivals, or even PR, you know, those kind of things. You're your own everything. So it is disheartening when you are in your creative fields and then you get an email and you have to switch into your assistant mode, you know, those kind of things. So those are the little hurdles that you kind of have to cross. But in terms of survival, I would say there is a way of creating revenue, but I wouldn't say that there's a whole stream of it, you know, like it's not falling like Victoria Falls, really. Because at the same time, it's like having a competition of people's traumas, you know, like the other person can speak of, in this work, I speak of my mother, and the next person could say, no, I'm speaking about my father in this work. And then how do you then, you know, kind of compare the two? And also, how do you compare that you are getting more successful or not? Because it would depend on the amount of course, sales you're making. But at the end of the day, it's not necessarily about sales, but just making enough to get by, but at the same time, creating. So, to be quite frank, there's not enough money as much as there should be, because hence you find a lot of us are in outside of South Africa, because in Europe especially, they appreciate art more, you know. They're willing to buy art, and you know, and they see you as an investment, you know. So but in South Africa there is a market, but it's not so strong, you know. So yeah, so that's why, oh sorry, so that's why other people do odd jobs, and you photograph weddings, you take on a side gig. So that's what I do. I teach, I take commissions, and then I create my personal art. So yeah.
How does one get a piece of Tsepiso Mazibuko on their wall? You've just mentioned that, you know, an independent and other people move through a gallery and stuff like that. So if somebody's listening to this and saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to look and see. How does one get, does somebody engage you directly? How are they, you know, if there's no gallery that's showcasing your work at the time and they're standing in front of the pick and they choose to buy that, how other do they get Tsepiso Mazibuko's work?
So they definitely engage with me. Although I'm still trying to figure out a system where I don't have to handle that. I've been quite cagey about my work, because one of my aim is to have an archive that belongs to me and doesn't belong to any foreign institution, or you know, just like a legacy for myself. So hence I deal with the purchases myself. So you can reach out directly to me, and then I handle everything. And then in terms of international relations, I do have a consignment that I have with a gallery called Gallery Magnin. So they don't have me under their gallery. So what we have is an agreement that people that want to buy internationally, they can buy through the gallery. But then through Of Soul and Joy as well, there is space to reach out and say, I'm looking to get in contact to buy my work. Because at the same time, you know, Denzel, to be quite honest, I've never really explored the business side of it, because I've always been quite passionate in trying to portray this certain thing, story or theme. But I think with growth, I've become a realist and tried to be quite genuine and honest with myself in how I move. So I'm definitely working and figuring out how do I have a cohesive system if I'm not signed under a gallery in with people purchasing my works?
Sapiso, you know, I'm gonna say I'm one of those who I really truly would want a piece of your work on my wall. I just I've been looking at some of the things you've been shooting and I really really like. So yeah, I'm going to make that particular effort to go and get a piece of your work on my wall. But I'm gonna end the conversation saying this. Sean O'Toole
Yes.
said, "Your work is something close to poetry." Also said you have a sensitive approach, honest representation. But then likened your work, and this was the ultimate for me, likened your work to David Goldblatt and Santu Mofokeng. And I thought, David Goldblatt? I know David Goldblatt. I know what he's done. I know what he's shot. I've been in the galleries. I've seen his work. And yes, Tsepiso, who Sean O'Toole says is in the same kind of category as the work of David Goldblatt. And that, I think, is exceptional. So, Tsepiso, you know what? That is a wow.
Thank you. I'm super humbled really by this. Thank you.
No, thank you, Tsepiso. And I'm going to be watching your work. And yeah, like I said, I'm going to make an effort to get a piece of your work on a
Yes.
wall in my house.
Please do. Please do. I'm reachable, directly. So obviously you have my number, so
I've got
please
your
do
number.
support a living artist.
Support a living artist, Tsepiso. I'm going to be supporting a living artist, that's for sure.
Thank you, Denzel.
Thank
Thank
you,
you.
Tsepiso Mazibuko. And yeah, you know, there was it for me. And as I was reading about Tsepiso Mazibuko and how she engages all of this, and then Sean O'Toole saying he appreciates the sensitive approach, the honest representation, sees her work as something close to poetry, and then says, likens her work to David Goldblatt and Santu Mofokeng. And I was like, wow, okay. If there are accolades, yeah, they are. David Goldblatt, go look him up, and then you'll see what Tsepiso Mazibuko is all about. But of course, find out who she's all about. Anyway, Google her and then support a living artist.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.